Welcome to the Working Capital Real Estate Podcast. My name is Jesse Vergali, and on this show, we discuss all things real estate with investors and experts in a variety of industries that impact real estate. Whether you're looking at your first investment or raising your first fund, join me and let's build that portfolio one square foot at a time. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Jess Vergali, and you're listening to Working Capital, the Real Estate Podcast. My guest today is Tyler Cobble. Tyler is an investor and broker in commercial real estate from Nashville. Tyler, welcome back.
Jesse, honored to be here, man. Thanks for having me on.
Anytime, man. So you are a returning guest. It's probably been about a year since you were last on the podcast, but we have been kind of going back and forth, I think bi-weekly or bi-monthly, whatever the correct term is for that, on kind of chatting basically commercial real estate from a broker's perspective, broker and investor's perspective. So that's been a lot of fun. So I thought it would be great to have you on and, you know, talk to my audience a little bit about kind of the background of what you do. And chat a little bit about where we're at right now in the market cycle and, you know, where you're seeing opportunities. Obviously, you know, there's a bunch of different markets that are telling different stories. You're in Nashville, I'm in Toronto. We, you know, we chat about all the cities in North America and kind of generally speaking. But yeah, I thought it'd be great to have that conversation. So for people that didn't tune into the first podcast, maybe you could give a little bit of a background of kind of how you got into real estate and what you currently do now, Ty.
Yeah, man, it's going to be a fun conversation. You know, appreciate you coming on the Brokers Roundtables. Those have been a lot of fun. And, you know, it's the content that you and I wish that we'd had when we first got started, right? I mean, that's why I love doing a podcast so much. And I know that's why you do it. It's because, you know, back when we were getting started, nobody was doing this stuff. And so it was so frustrating to learn everything. So of course, appreciate what you're doing and love the podcast. But yeah, man, I got started back in 2013 as the in-house leasing agent for a boutique development firm. Had zero knowledge about commercial real estate. I didn't even know that somebody represented Chipotle and put them in there. Never even thought about somebody owning those buildings. Mm-hmm. So it was quite the learning curve getting started. And of course, I never realized how lucky I had it until probably 3 or 4 years into the business when most of my friends had graduated college because I was a dropout. They were graduating college and trying to get into commercial real estate. And some of them were interviewing 50 times and not getting a job. So that's when I kind of realized like, oh man, I might've struck gold here, but I focused, you know, solely on our in-house assets, some office, retail, and industrial, and got those leased up in about 2 years. Then I started looking into development projects, put my first development deal together, which was 42 townhomes, and then left and started my own firm in 2018, for commercial real estate brokerage. We then vertically integrated with a commercial property management company, and now I've added a development firm back in 2020. So we're also looking at adding construction. I apparently sleep too much at night, so yeah. I need more things to work on. But yeah, I'm based in Nashville, Tennessee. I don't know if y'all caught the Toronto Maple Leafs Nashville Predators game on Saturday night. Heartbreaker for you guys. I'm sorry, but man, what a wild game. Big hockey fan, even though I'm from the South. So
I'd like to say that we're not used to it, but that's a whole nother story. So when you got started, Ty, I don't think we actually kind of dove into the initial couple properties that you bought. So you mentioned that first deal that you did. Was it always like in your first few deals, was it that commercial residential or did you pivot into industrial properties after that? What was that thinking at that time?
Yeah. So my first deal, that first development project, I almost don't even count it sometimes when I talk about my first deal because I was working for a development firm. I kind of cheated a little bit, right? I went out, I knew exactly what the developer wanted to buy, went out, found a property, put it under contract, pitched it to him and got a partnership in it. And, you know, I didn't have to come up with any cash. I didn't have to raise any capital, but I was the project manager, right? I was the guy there doing all of the work for 2 years, pulling that deal together. And so from that perspective, I mean, it was my first investment. I didn't get paid until it was done. And, you know, it was quite the experience. Got to run through everything from, you know, surveys to engineering, architecture, development and construction, wild ride. But my first four buildings actually were all office when I started buying and doing value add. This was in 2019. First deal was about 6,000 square feet, totally vacant. We ended up renovating it and putting two tenants in there. Ended up selling that building to one of the tenants. Second building was a 12,000 square foot office building that I converted from 6 offices to 17 offices. So more of that micro office focus. delivered that in January of 2020, which most people, when they hear that, they're like, oh man, what a terrible time to be delivering office space. But jokes on them, when you do micro office space, you don't have to worry about pandemics. We signed 17 leases by August and sold it that October of 2020. And then a couple of other buildings, one that I still have, which is what I'm in here now. I'm actually a big fan of office, despite what everybody's saying today. I think that, you know, there are incredible office investments out there, but it was 2020 when I started investing more on the retail side. I actually knew retail better than office, but the opportunities that I was seeing when I first got started were in the office space.
Where do you see the challenges, or if it is more of a challenge when we're talking about retail and office? Like, put office aside, just because it's going through its office is having a moment right now, and it's going through a very unique time. But yeah, on the retail side, you know, investors that invest predominantly in residential, whether it's single family or multi-res, it's pretty simple to conceptualize in terms of, you know, what the landlord does, what money you put in to deals. But retail is a little different, right? Oftentimes they're triple net leases, and the capital or CapEx is different. So what are some of those differences that you notice with retail? And it was something that, you know, is it a bug or is it a feature from your standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, I think retail is a better investment than residential. I know I'm probably one of the few people out there that would actually say that. I'm not a big fan of single family investments at all. It took me forever to buy my own home because for the longest time I was like, yeah, I'm just going to be sinking cash into it and getting nothing out of it. It's just, yeah, it's equity, but it's trapped equity. It doesn't mean anything until I sell. You know, and on the multifamily side, I mean, multifamily is a great investment class. Don't get me wrong. I just don't like it personally because I don't want to invest in places where people live. But, you know, look, I'm the guy that's in the wrong there. I mean, everybody else is buying up apartments and doing really well. So good for them. It's just not the asset class for me. I think, you know, retail is really interesting. In many ways, it's actually more simple than single family. I think a lot of people kind of gravitate towards single family one because it's so familiar. You know, most people grow up in a home or they know how home ownership works and renting those units out. And there's a lot of demand for people that want to rent single family homes. I think that what people really get caught up on, because I mean, you take the CapEx aside, put the lease structures aside. The thing that is the most confusing for most people is, where am I going to find a tenant? How does that process work? I don't understand who's going to lease this space. And that's a pretty good concern. Right? Like, don't buy a building where you have no idea where the tenant is going to come from, because that's just not going to be a good investment for you. And, you know, that's where you got to spend some time learning the retail market, what makes a tenant tick, and talking to retail brokers. I mean, honestly, like, you know I'm a broker saying go talk to brokers, but even if I wasn't a broker, I mean, brokers are the front lines, right? They know exactly what is going on in the trenches. They know which tenants are out there looking, which ones are not, which ones you should sign a lease with, which ones you shouldn't. And they will help you get started when you're first looking at this. There's no other better way to learn about retail tenants than through a commercial real estate broker. So highly recommend building a relationship with those different guys or gals in your market, because they'll be able to kind of guide you along the way. Once you understand how they're going to backfill the space, I mean, the CapEx, yeah, maybe you're doing different types of CapEx, but it's the same process. You know, maybe you're doing tenant improvement allowances and build outs and stuff like that. Your broker or your project manager, or even sometimes your attorney, can walk you through that. And then, you know, same on the leasing side, just get a really good attorney. You know, you're going to pay $3,000, $5,000, $7,000, depending on what kind of deal it is, for a lease, but it's going to be a templated lease that you're going to be able to reuse on that property time and time again. And I see too many people cut corners, you know, because like in residential, you're so used to just, I mean, in the States, we have what's called, you know, TAR forms. That's in Tennessee. Tennessee Association of Realtors rental forms, right? There's also, you know, Kentucky Association of Realtors, whatever, right? Where it's just templated. And that's fine for residential, but every commercial building is different. Every office building, every retail building, every industrial building is different. And you want to make sure that that lease is catered to your specific uses, because if it's not, you're going to be spending a lot more than whatever your fees would have been on the right attorney on the front end. I can promise you that.
Yeah. And there's so many examples, like on the retail side, oftentimes, you know, there's going to be provisions that you can't have certain types of tenants or exclusions. If you have, you know, one type of, you know, a QSR or something, you can't have the same in the same building or in the same property. So yeah, that makes sense. In terms of the retail, sometimes it could actually be simpler too, industrial and retail, where in office, you're doing a lot of CapEx for the tenants. Again, office is changing over the last couple of years, but retail oftentimes in our market for prime retail, you know, they're the ones that are doing their expensive build outs. It's usually the landlords that are kind of handing over shell space or, you know, non-built out space and saying, hey, go, you know, go to it.
Yeah, that's right. You don't have to, you know, as the landlord, you don't have to deal with it. Typically in new construction, you'll have what's called a tenant improvement allowance, where you're setting cash aside to give to the tenant to help with their build out. But, you know, that might only be $30 or $45 a square foot, whereas the tenant might be spending $75 to $125 a square foot, right? So they're actually going to be spending money on your space. Whereas office users, absolutely, they fully expect you to do all of the work and make it move and ready for them.
Yeah. And the other thing too is, like you said earlier, you know, residential, it makes more sense to people because, you know, people grow up in a house typically and they kind of can understand it. I think the other thing, aside from filling the space, it's about, you know, once you find out who the right tenants are, what we get from clients when we're listing space is about vetting tenants. You know, when you vet a residential tenant, you know, you get income, you know, maybe you pull a, depending on the state and the province, you know, you're allowed or not allowed to pull background checks, different things. But when you're vetting a business, you have to now understand what that business is. And, you know, what does this type of cash flow mean? You know, what type of quick ratios? You start having to be a little bit more sophisticated on that end to really vet tenants. And for you guys, how did that process evolve for you from being able to look at tenants? Because, you know, brokers are great. We're both brokers, but at the end of the day, we serve up a tenant to our landlord. They're the ones that have to make the final decision once they see the financials of the company.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, I ended up learning it a little bit differently because, you know, I worked directly for the developer that I was leasing a lot of these spaces for. So, you know, as soon as we started talking to tenants, he would say, how do their financials look? And I'm like, I don't know. I've never even done taxes before. Like, I don't know what that means. Right. Yeah. So he'd be like, okay, here's how you look at tax returns. Here's what you look for. You need 3 years of tax returns. You need a personal financial statement and you need 6 months of bank statements. I was like, okay, cool. I don't know what any of those are, but we'll figure it out. So, you know, basically 3 years of tax returns, right? That's pretty straightforward. What has the business been historically doing for the last 3 years that they've reported to the government? When you're looking at those financials, you need to understand what write-offs are and depreciation and some of these other assets, because really what they're doing is they're, you know, on paper, they might have a loss, but they could be cash flowing six figures plus a year, right? Yeah. So it's very important to understand that. Because an unsophisticated landlord might look at a business having a loss and just say, nope, not renting to them, when really they might be in a very strong cash position. Then you compare that to their personal financial statement, which basically shows you how much cash they have on hand, their assets, their liabilities, their, you know, real estate owned, whatever it is. And it gives you a better picture of their overall health as a guarantor. And then, of course, 6 months of bank statements allows you to dig into their current cash flows, right? Like how are their, you know, how's their incoming cash and their outgoing cash over the last 6 month period to make sure that they're going to be able to pay you rent. Really, when you look at those three things, and it doesn't take that long, it takes maybe less than 5 minutes to understand it. You know, once you kind of dive into that, you feel pretty good about whether the tenant's worth leasing to or not. And, you know, if we're on the edge about it, we'll say, hey, we're going to increase your security deposit to 2 months or 3 months of rent, or, you know, we're actually going to, you know, need you to bring an additional guarantor to sign on this lease with you. Just depends on the situation. You know, we try and get creative and work with people, but sometimes there's just some businesses where you're like, you spend way too much of your personal money on Uber Eats. I don't know how you have any cash at the end of the month. It doesn't make sense to me. That is a literal example. I had a guarantor that was spending five figures a month on Uber Eats. She had like zero cash at the end of every month. So we're like, yeah, it's just too risky. I don't see how this is going to work. But you know, the great thing about looking into the financials behind a tenant is that I can ask you for your mother's blood type. I can ask you for the last 10 years of history if I want. I can get as personal as I want to.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter because there's no fair housing laws when it comes to businesses. Yeah. This is a business transaction. I need to know the health of your company. So, you know, you've got to be very, very careful when it comes to residential leases like that. But, you know, fortunately, we can dive into it as much as we need to on the commercial side.
Yeah, it's a great, I mean, it's a huge factor for us. And like you said, it's not black and white. You know, if the financials aren't like what we typically do, a lot of the landlords we deal with, we have usually three kind of grades, you know, a low, mid, and high in terms of risk. And we adjust based on that risk. And some landlords might say, if it's a high risk, I don't want to touch it. And other landlords will say, if it's high risk, like you said, we're going to do you know, a larger deposit. We're going to, you know, not put money into the deal in an allowance up front. So you kind of, you can be more entrepreneurial, I think, with commercial. And like you said, you're not, you know, you're not offside by asking those things. These are businesses. I want to talk
about I've actually pushed it back on my team before because, you know, I mean, the way that brokers used to get paid commissions, it's very uncommon nowadays. We still do have a couple of deals where we get paid like this, but you know, this is how my grandfather always did it. He pays 3% monthly as he collects the rent. So I've got some deals that I'm collecting on for the next 5 years, some that I'm collecting on for the next 10 years. And, you know, that's one way to do it. You look at your broker and you say, this is a risk. I will pay you your 3% commission or 4%, whatever it is, every month, and kind of gauge what the broker is doing, right? Like if they're like, I don't know, then yeah, they're telling you it's probably not going to be a good tenant.
So,
there's ways you can get creative with it.
Yeah, please. Yeah, we will edit that out because that sounds terrible for me. But it, you know, it's one of those things.
Yeah, there you go.
It's that debate oftentimes for us of when we get paid, right? Is it all on execution of a lease? Is it all, you know, is it half on execution, half on rent commencement? And it kind of gets to the heart of what's our job? Is our job giving you a viable tenant and you making the call, or is it, you know, performance of that tenant? And yeah, it's definitely, again, it's a great example of how in commercial real estate, you can really, you know, you can say, let's do it this way. And it doesn't have to be exactly the way everybody does it and has done it since the, you know, the beginning of time in our world. But
yeah, you can structure these deals however you want.
Absolutely. So for, you know, for those that don't know, you are a broker and investor, you know, they know now if they've been listening to this, and that is not necessarily the path that most brokers take, that, you know, they go into brokerage and oftentimes they don't invest in real estate at all. But what was that transition like when you're in brokerage and you want to continue to pursue on investment? I assume, you know, from our conversations, you kept your license. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big believer in making sure that you're getting advice from the right people, right? I'm not going to go ask, you know, a train conductor how to fly an airplane, right? It just, yes, you're both in the same public transportation business, but you have no idea how to fly that airplane. I would not take advice from a commercial real estate a broker on an investment if they haven't done an investment themselves. And, you know, that was always kind of the goal for me, was I've got to start buying commercial properties as quickly as I can, because I had seen some older brokers in the business that had to keep working because they did that. They never invested. They always lived paycheck to paycheck. And, you know, I didn't want that lifestyle for myself. And I knew that as soon as I started buying my own commercial properties, I would be a better advisor to my investor clients who were looking to make that move. So, you know, it was in 2019 when I bought my first office building, and man, it was not intentional. I don't know that I ever would have started buying real estate unless I had gotten pushed off the cliff like I did. But, you know, I was representing a client buying a $575,000 office building, and, you know, he ended up not getting his funding from his partner. And, you know, for one reason or another, I mean, it was a great building. We've been working on it for 60 days at this point. He says, hey, I'm going to have to terminate this contract. I said, hold on. There's like an $18,000 commission in there for me. I got to figure this out. So I made a couple of calls to some other investors, found another guy that was like, oh, cool. Yeah, sign it to me. I'll buy this building. We got 30 more days into it. He couldn't get his funding from the bank. It's like, damn, we're back in the same spot. I've been working on this deal for 90 days now. And I said, you know what? Assign it to me. I see a very clear path forward. I looked at it. I was like, we only have to rent it out for $8 a square foot triple net. That is so below market in all of Nashville that there's no way we can go wrong with this. And so I just had him assign it to me, and it was kind of off to the races. You know, I had to figure it out. So I ended up calling, I only made two phone calls on that first deal, which is gave me the worst idea of how raising capital goes. They both said yes. They both gave me $50,000 each. And it was the easiest capital raise ever. I had $100,000. I rolled my commission in and we were off to the races. My next capital raise was not nearly that simple. It was a lot more difficult. It took a lot more phone calls and a lot more meetings. But that was kind of how I got started into it. And man, it's the best thing I've ever done, you know, especially with the vertical integration within our companies, because we've got the brokerage, property management, development. And like I said, we're adding construction. You know, on every deal that I do, we get paid like seven different ways today. So, you know, I don't have to worry about going out and doing a volume of deals. I can just do one, two, three deals a year, and I'm pretty happy, which means that I can focus on more quality deals, making them do better than if I was your typical investment shop, which they make a majority of their fees on the acquisitions. So they have to keep buying, even if it's not a, you know, great investment. They might get their investors into a deal that's okay because they just need to get that acquisition fee. So it definitely aligns my interests with my investors for sure.
Yeah, that makes sense, because that acquisition fee, you know, if it's a capital raise fee and then, you know, percentage of the asset, and you just have kind of keep, you know, quotations, the keep the lights on money, you know, throughout the project. If that's not a substantial amount of income, then you're right. They're looking for the next deal. And then we get in a time like today, depending on the asset class, where the volume is just not going to be what it was, you know, two, 3 years ago, where, you know, some asset classes are down 60, 70%.
Oh yeah, it's brutal, man. I mean, I have a feeling, you know, that we're going to start to see some really distressed properties hitting the market in the next 6 to 12 months. You know, everybody was starting to say back 12 months ago, oh, it's coming. Well, commercial real estate lags behind. It's the same as in the pandemic when everybody said back in 2020, oh, office is dead, but it wasn't. And office wasn't hardly affected at all. And that's because, you know, these deals move on a longer timeline than most people realize. We're talking 3 to 5 to 7 years. That's how long leases are. That's how long loan terms are. So if something happens 3 years ago, it's not really going to show its face until next year or the year after. Today. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm talking 24 or 25. So it'll be interesting to see what comes up in the next 12 months for sure. I mean, there's going to be a lot of, you know, like we talked about this before, the Nightingale portfolio down in Houston. I mean, you know, that guy bought 3,200 apartment units with floating rate debt. And I don't know any savvy investors that do that. That was somebody that was just kind of jumping into a frothy market and happened to have too much, you know, more money than sense. But you know, his interest rate went from 4% to 8% overnight. I mean, well, probably over 6 months, but that's basically overnight
Pretty much commercial real estate.
And he had to give the keys. I mean, that's my nightmare.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, to wrap up here, why don't we chat a little, it's a good segue. Why don't we chat a little bit about where you think the, you know, 2024, 2025, are you doing anything differently in terms of how you're looking at deals, or, you know, are you focusing on certain opportunities?
Yeah. So this year has been very different for us. You know, we bought a lot of properties in 2020, 21, and 22. Didn't buy anything this year. And not necessarily for lack of trying. We've had a couple of properties under contract that we ended up dropping just because we couldn't get the loan terms that made sense. We couldn't really get our construction costs where they needed to be. So we dropped them. It's not worth going bankrupt on one of these deals. I'd rather just not buy one. And, you know, right now what we're looking at is what is cash flowing today? And what is a good deal today? Maybe it's break even, but what is a good deal? So, you know, I heard this the other day, and this is going to be my mantra moving forward. It's, you know, you can refinance out of a bad loan. You can't refinance out of a bad purchase price. So if we're getting a bad loan today, or what you would say is quote unquote a bad loan, 8% historically is not a terrible loan rate. It's only bad when you take into consideration the last 5 years. If I can get a property at a 10, 15, 20% discount today, and I still have to pay 8% interest rate, I will refinance out of that 8% in the next 2 to 3 years, hopefully closer to 5 or 6. And then that purchase price will be an absolute home run. So those are the kind of assets that we're looking for right now. It doesn't matter the asset class. I would buy office tomorrow if it was the right deal, the right price, the right location, the right story. I think that you know, I said this at the Bigger Pockets conference. I think that people love to beat up on one asset class at all times, right? It was retail. Now it's office. Who knows what it's going to be next? And, you know, whenever I hear that, it's like, okay, cool. What's the opportunity there? If everybody, it's the Warren Buffett method. If everybody's going to be scared, that I should probably run in that direction. So there's going to be a whole bunch of opportunity there.
Yeah. My favorite example of that is, and it's so sharp, the distinction when you love an asset class and don't, and, you know, student res, the same people that said those, you know, those are nightmare investments are, you know, all of a sudden saying, you know, they're recession proof. You got to buy student res during, you know, after the pandemic. But yeah, absolutely. Yep. Ty, for those that, you know, want to get in contact with you or on social media, where can we send them? We'll put some links up in the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely. Come follow me on Instagram. I respond to every DM. It's at commercial in Nashville, underscores the spaces in between. Or come watch me and Jesse do our Brokers Roundtable on the YouTube channel. It's just at Tyler Cobble. I'm doing that every couple of weeks, and we have a really, really good time. It's a great crew. I'm just fortunate to have assembled some really awesome brokers for that.
My guest today has been Tyler Cobble. Ty, thanks again for being part of Working Capital.
Thanks, Jesse.
Thank you so much for listening to Working Capital, the real estate podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Fregale. If you liked the episode, head on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review and share on social media. It really helps us out. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me on Instagram, Jesse Fregale, Fragale. Have a good one. Take care.